The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here
Friends,
is your
thank
host,
you so very much
Mike
for
Gilland.
Being with me today on Afternoons with Mike, it is a joy each and every day to be right here on this spot with you, regardless of where you might be and from where you're listening right now. Could be a car, could be at home, could be an office. We want to say thank you so much. My guest today is somebody that is on regularly. He's just a beloved guy by everyone on this staff and in the building in which we are housed, the Shepherd Studios. His name is John Crossman. John is a longtime businessman, a longtime leader, and recognized really not only in this area, but around the world. And John, first of all, I got to say congratulations on being a part of an article you told me about. You were quoted in the most unusual place, Woman's Day magazine.
That's right.
How did that happen?
Well, just so you know, I've also been quoted in Cosmo, but that's another day. Just so real quick, the Cosmo story,
goodness.
So I disclosed that, it was an article about the benefits of marrying young. And so I was like, because I got married at 24, and so I talked about that. Woman's Day, that article was about 11, they had 11 tips for moms and dads with kids during COVID, like where they might have been doing some things differently. And I talked about mental health and, you know, my teenage daughters and, you know, being aware of that and the social distancing and that can lead to depression and anxiety. And what's funny is when the article came out, I read it at the dinner table to my daughters and I was a little nervous, you know, because obviously, you know, I like being transparent, be out there. They loved it. They loved it so much. They were with me on that one. And, you know, you and I talk about this. I like to say, you know, feel your feelings and speak your truth. And so we try to share that message and help it encourages others.
Now, in the process of reading this, something occurred to me as I'm reading it, and I think it would be good to qualify that when an article, it's not a long article, it's a quick read, when you, the term mental health is mm-hmm. used. I think so many times, especially in my generation, people that hear that, there's an implication that when it is used that there's a correlation to mental illness, and that's not the case.
Right, right, right.
Because we're living in a day and age to where we've learned a lot more about things like depression, oppression from a clinical standpoint. And these things are not one and the same. So a person could be having some mental health issues. That does not mean that they are inherently sick, inherently problematic with regards to an illness that cannot be reversed. Would that be a fair? Oh,
absolutely. I mean, it's like all kinds of health. Like we exercise for health. We eat right for health. Somebody may be diabetic, and so they have a different on the continuum of issues with that, and somebody else may be a world-class athlete. So there's all levels of that, right? So mm-hmm. that depends. You know, Mike, I, you know, a lot of my family, my heritage comes from Ohio and Kentucky, and a lot of them were farmers, and there's a lot of that, you know, feeling in a lot of Americans of like, hey, no matter what happens, the crop's got to come in, you got to get up hard, work hard, and you keep working. I was talking to my mom this morning, and she, you know, she's 81, and she's, you know, widow, and she has some health issues. And this morning, I call her every morning to check on her. And she said, John, I slept until 7:30 this morning. I really feel bad about myself. Like, I got to get moving, get my chores done. You know, like, so it's there's still a lot of that in us. What's interesting, though, is that let's take a deep dive into Scripture, right? And so one of my favorite Bible persons is Old Testament Joseph. And, you know, when he has that moment where he sees his family, the ones that sold him into slavery, you know, he does not run right up to them.
He has to turn around.
Oh, yeah.
He leaves the room.
That's right. I mean, you know, when we think about kind of speaking in a Christianese way, that's, you know, we would be thinking, oh, did you run up and hug him and say, I love you, whatever? No, like it was terrible. When we think about David and when we read the Psalms, there's this expression of emotion. When we look at the life of Christ, you know, Christ was frustrated at times. He was lonely at times. He was angry at times. He was sad at times. So I think somewhere along the way in our worldview, we kind of muted a lot of times feelings that actually God gave us feelings for a reason. And God has given us so many examples of how to deal with our feelings in healthy ways that sometimes culturally we've gotten away from.
Mm-hmm.
So part of that is, and so we're talking about mental health as opposed to mental illness. So mental health is just acknowledging that. Like, you know, I always laugh about the lessons I've learned from my Great Dane, you know, like Pepper. if Pepper is lying on the couch most of the day, she at some point will scratch the back door and she'll go outside and she'll lie in the grass and just sit in the grass, right? It's like she knows, hey, I need to get outside some, right? And so knowing that, hey, if we're in an office building all day, you know, that's not great for our mental health. We need to go out and take a walk, right?
Mm-hmm.
Advent Health has their Creation Health book that talks about all the ways to live to be a healthy 100, to be live 100 for 100 years. And part of that's, of course, it's exercise and eating right, things that we think normally, but it's also mental health.
And, you know, this is something that is being talked about a lot because of COVID, because of the fact that people are cooped in more. People are, in some instances, like people in nursing homes or assisted living centers, they're flat out isolated in many occasions. They're not even able to see the family for weeks, or maybe it's been months. I've
right.
heard stories like that. And so that has an impact on somebody's ability to process every day. You know, we start waking up in the morning and we may not be cheerful. We may find ourselves, people who are in that scenario, may be waking up in the morning and finding themselves depressed, flat out depressed. So it does have a whole lot to do with the environment in which we live. It has to do with our hope for tomorrow. And those things carry not only an immediate thing in our feelings, but a long-term impact on our life.
You know, it's funny, Mike. Just please take this grain of salt. This I'm just confessing this to you as part of my internal humanity. But, you know, when the protests were happening, there was a part of me like, man, I like to go protest. Like in the context of like, I'd like to get out of my house and run around a little bit and yell, you know. And I was watching it thinking, man, in my mind, there's a connection between the COVID and the social distancing and the protests. There's like a direct line to that. That if you take a lot of young people, particularly young men, and you coop them up and coop them up and coop them up, there's a bounce back to that of like, you know, just wanting to, you know, get outside. You know, when I was in my teens and my early 20s, so much of my life was exercising and being outside and doing things outside. And you take a population and shove it inside. And look, I'm not trying to be disrespectful to the importance of behavior during a pandemic. Of course I am. But I'm trying to also push into it's good for us to acknowledge what's happening, acknowledging what's happening is acknowledging how God made us. And if we're moving away from that, you know, what do we do to respond to that so that we stay healthy?
Well, that's very important. And wanting to stay healthy is something that I believe every person should do all that they can do. A good friend who was a doctor one time made a great statement. He said, you know, it's one thing. He said, I know God's sovereign and our days are numbered, but how we live those days can greatly be impacted by how we live.
Right.
And the choices we make. So while it's true that my days may be numbered in terms of their length or the breadth of my the amount of years I live, how I live those last years might greatly be altered. I might be much more happy, joyful, in better health, able to do more if I'm mindful of all these things. And I think that's wise. So I've asked John to do something unusual today in our segment. And it would be, I'm thinking about John, if someone were to say to me, Mike, what is John like? What kind of guy is he? Well, here's a couple of quick answers I would give you. John is a wise man. John is an experienced man. John has led businesses. He continues to lead not one, but a couple of businesses, even though if you read the Orlando Sentinel, you'll find that he retired a couple of years ago. You'd say, well wait a minute, I thought he retired. Well, no. This man is never going to actually retire. He's just going to change what he's doing. He's lived a lot of life. I've met his kids. His kids are wonderful. When I think of John, if I were to put it down to one thing, John is a guy worth following. He's a guy worth emulating. And I just hit me. What would it be like if John Crossman could speak at this stage of his life to a younger version of himself years ago? And there was a song Now, for our podcast, we can't actually play the song, but it's a great one. I invite you to check it out. Look it up on iTunes. It was by Mercy Me, and the name of the song is Dear Younger Me. If he could go back, if he could hear it again, if he could see some things over again, if he could have a redo, wouldn't it be wonderful to have a redo in your life? And what would it be? He said, it wouldn't be hard for me to imagine what I would say, what I would do. And one of the main things that he would see is that we cannot go beyond the cross. We cannot try to do something that was accomplished for us on the cross. So, friends, today I've got John Crossman here. And again, having met John, and we're going to take this today in a couple of different stages. The one would be, first of all, parents. And maybe you're listening today and you've got kids that are grown and they've actually got their own children. So as grandparents, what would you say back to especially parents of kids, John, that would be elementary to high school age? What would you say to them that if you could do anything over again in your life, what piece of advice would you offer first?
You know, these are big questions, my brother. These are big stuff, and it's hard. Because so much of life is learning, experiencing. So when I think about this, the first thing I think about that I really wish I'd gotten better in touch when I was younger was what I was really feeling, what I was actually really feeling. And part of that goes into when we think about life and regret, like if we think of some past sin we did that caught us on a path, when I reflect on what was it I was feeling that maybe led me to that, right? So an example would be is that if I link back about how lonely I was, and then I realized, gosh, I was hanging out with people I probably shouldn't have been. And so then trying to think back on the skill set that would have helped me get on that right path. So again, old school me would be, well, you know, I was hanging out with people I shouldn't have been, doing things I shouldn't have been, and that was sinning, and I should just not been doing that. And that's easy to say. But I think if I had had the ability to kind of better articulate, well, I feel lonely and I feel bored and I don't know how to connect with people, mm-hmm. that maybe then I could have done a better job of self-advocating and then trying to figure out how to address those issues.
You know, one thing that I wonder, and I've heard this before, and I wonder if you agree with this, is that sometimes it's that people listen to themselves too much in the sense that they get lost in their own thoughts.
Sure.
They get lost in their own feelings.
Sure.
And they trust their own feelings in those moments way too much.
Right.
So in other words, if let's take a young child who has just been maybe in a difficult conversation, maybe it's been something to where they feel like they have been absolutely mocked to scorn. This suddenly becomes all they are thinking about. It becomes their entire world. And sometimes, even as a young person, I wonder if they could process that better, if they could put it in its right importance in their lives. And, you know, that's just part of growing up right there. But
sure.
But you're right. I think what you're saying is identifying correctly what you're feeling, mm-hmm. and then sort it out.
Mm-hmm. There's an old song from the 70s that's called Night Moves. And there's a line in that, like, working off those awkward teenage blues. Right. And so all the things in that night was were inappropriate things.
Mm-hmm.
But that light, the line of that awkward teenage blues really connects. Right. Because, you know, when you're in that phase and you're not quite an adult, but you're ramping up. And then how do you process all that? And to your point about you're really referencing like toxic, like, you know, if somebody is getting obsessed on anything, mm-hmm. obsessed on eating, obsessed on work or whatever, that's bad. Like there's always there's a balance of things. And when you're a teenager and trying to learn those balances, I go back earlier than that. I think about my nephew and his wife, you know, we're talking about what is it to be a parent? You know, they're thinking about someday having kids and what does that look like? And so I said to them, you know, let's talk about that. I think one of the things about being a parent is teaching maturity. And one of the first steps in being maturity is self-control. And so when you have a child and they want, you know, a cookie, they'd eat 10 cookies, but teaching them to eat one cookie. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen some families where they do not teach that at all. And the kids develop weight problems. And then people might think, well, that's not that big a deal. Well, what happens when they're confronted with porn or drinking or cigarettes or, you know, I mean, or all kinds of things, but like learning these early steps of self-control.
That is so wise, because of the fact that even though those things are miles apart, let's say, in terms of the person's activity, the common problem is the fact is that lack of self-control, that they allow themselves to step into that arena, that area of their mm-hmm. life when they shouldn't. And that's what ties something like pornography in with overeating.
Right.
Two radically different problems, but yet what is common among them is the fact that people are doing what they shouldn't do.
Well, I think a lot of Christian communities shame sex and don't shame all-you-can-eat buffet, right? Mm. But they're similar in that there's a beauty to it, and then there's an unhealthiness to it, right? And having honest conversations about that. You know, a child really understands emotions. Like, that's kind of the whole thing. And so if they're feeling scared, right, and then they have a cookie and the cookie is comforting to them, like that can stay with somebody their whole life of how they feel comfort. And it's very hard to break from that later in life. Mm. I think another example would be is personal responsibility. You know, that when you make a mistake in a life, owning up to that and saying, yeah, mm-hmm. I made that mistake. That was my fault. And it's amazing to people. I it's funny. You like this, Mike. I made a comment on social media and somebody called me out on it, and I read their response to me and I was like, wow, they're right and I'm wrong. And so I apologized. I just wrote, I'm so sorry. You are correct. I did not say that was not what I should have said. They responded to me and said, and for the first time in social media history, someone's apologized.
which might not be true. However,
right.
it there's probably a whole lot more truth to that than we like to think about.
Right. There was a guy I went to high school with, and just last week he was commenting about something. He's a bit of a snarky guy, but he said that there were no evangelicals that took the teachings of Christ seriously. Mm-hmm. That's what he wrote. And I haven't seen him since high school, but we're social media friends. And so I responded to him and I wrote, ouch. And then I said, I'm so sorry, because I'm an evangelical and clearly I have failed you, because my posts have not made you feel like that I believe teachings of Christ. And I'm sorry about that.
Mm.
And he immediately responded and said, oh, I forgot about you. And then we had this wonderful exchange after that.
Right.
But I'm trying to tell you, like, teaching a child at a very early age to take responsibility. And then the third one is, like, don't repeat mistakes, you know, not mm-hmm. repeating the same mistake over and over again.
Mm.
And that's really wisdom. And, of course, a lot of times in life, those three things I just said can be taught to a four-year-old. And yet if we went to a prison today, we'd find a lot of people in their 40s and 50s and 60s that still don't quite understand that.
They have not learned it to the point of being able to apply it.
Correct.
I think, you know, talking to young parents, and I know my daughter has a very smart 3-year-old right now. And we had this discussion just recently about how that there are times that the child, whoever they are, they'll know better. Even at the early ages, they still know better. But the will that is inside all of us at humans, at times, it lies to us and tells us, yeah, but it's worth it. You're going to get in trouble. Go ahead and do it anyway, because it's what you want to do.
Right.
And at times we see our children. I remember, John, the first time I took my first child, who was about 3 at that point when this incident happened. Cindy and I were out shopping in a big supermarket. It'd be kind of like the Publix back up in Indiana. Kind of like that. And we were there, and my young daughter just saw something and wanted it. And I said, no, we're not going to get that. And I was shocked and surprised to find out that she instantly fell to the ground and started just doing circles in the aisle, you know. And I'm thinking, I never taught her that. Where does that come from? Well, it comes from the will. And
right.
That's where we as humans can go all the way back. Our desires are strong, mm-hmm. and they're put there as a part of our DNA, a part of the fall. And that doesn't mean that it's an environmental thing that they've learned at all, but it has to be overcome. We
yeah.
have to learn. And that's where parents, I think one of the toughest jobs, it's walking those things out.
Well, and it's and having honesty about it. You know, one of my proudest moments of my wife, and I heard about this later, but she went to a counseling session with one of our teenage daughters, And our daughter called my wife out on something in the counseling session. And my wife apologized. My wife apologized to our teenage daughter.
Wow.
And so when my wife called and told me that, I said, Angie, I mean, how many women are flashing back to their own childhoods thinking, wow, it would have been so great if my mom would apologize to me about that blank issue. Mm-hmm. And I was just so impressed with her humility and honesty in that. And so I think that also goes to ways that we model things. Like, we can't tell a child to have self-control and then we don't practice self-control. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't have a child to like learn from their mistakes and then we keep learning from our, not learning from our mistakes, right? Or if we don't take personal responsibility, you know? I had a big, I was a trustee for Valencia College for 4 years and I loved it. And my term came up and I got a call from the governor's office and they did not keep me on. They didn't renew me on. They placed me with somebody else. And so when I told some friends of mine about that, they were shocked and they were upset about it. And when I went home, I told the girls, I said, you know, this didn't happen for me. And, you know, maybe I didn't do all the things the governor wanted me to do. Maybe I did some things wrong. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, we're going to be sad and we're going to move on. And I saw that such a teaching moment of my own humility. Of them seeing like, hey, this was disappointing and how am I going to handle it? Right. And really walking through having them walk through that season with me. So I think giving that example to young children is really important.
Such great wisdom. I am not surprised at all. We're going to be back here with John Crossman coming up in just a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. Dear Younger Me is the title, and it's a great kind of like a jumping off point to our discussion today, and that's what I've asked John to come in. If you missed segment one, if you've just tuned in, we've been talking about the fact that if we had the ability to go back and do some things over again, kind of hear some advice from things that we've learned, what would it be? And John did a masterful job of bringing up a couple of different things, about three things that he would do to himself, he would share with himself, and really try to, as best he could, follow the advice that he has now learned and heeded and applied in his life to a younger person. So John Crossman is a leader. He has Crossman Builders, and boy, my goodness, he's an author, and he's involved in a lot of different things. He speaks to people from all over the spectrum of business, leadership, even politicians. John is, he knows a lot of folks, and I'm grateful for him. He's a friend of this program. And John, for this next segment, speaking of Dear Younger Me, what would you say to yourself if you could go back? What would you say to parents and grandparents, perhaps, who have children or grandchildren who are of college age? What would you go back and apply there?
Well, you know, first off, thanks again for having me. I don't think anybody really enjoys it when someone older says, in my day, you know, I do my Grandpa Simpson impression sometimes in my house, and I make up lies about, you know, my childhood just to be silly. And so I think sometimes when we think of context, it's not so much telling our younger selves, but trying to think in the reality of the world they're in today and what's the best advice from our wisdom to now. And so I'll give you an example. I had lunch yesterday with the dean of the FAMU College of Law. She and I and some other people have lunch every Tuesday and talk about different issues. And she is the mother of six children on top of being a law college dean. And she was talking about her one son who's 15 and he desperately wants to get a job. And she's been encouraging that, but he can't because he's 15 and not 16, right? So that's an interesting thing about life, that there's milestones. And sometimes as a young person, we want to achieve things and then we can't because of our age. Well, when we get to college age, something different happens in that there's a lot of cool things that college kids can do that they couldn't do before, but they need to sort of think through and taking a next big step that can impact the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so what am I talking about there? Well, the first one is finances, IRAs and 401ks.
Oh.
Listen, you know, when you think about younger self, I made a lot of mistakes in my life, but when I was in my 20s, I maxed out my 401k. And now at 49, I could quit giving to my retirement if I wanted to because of that decision. And it's a huge mistake that young people make that, mm-hmm. you know, if you're 18 and you have a job, you can open up an IRA, right? Even if it's just a little tiny bit, we all, as we get older, we really understand compounding interest, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the financial impact that young people have on the rest of their lives is huge. So I would say that I think when we're talking to college kids, to try to help them get their brain around, you are making very adult decisions that can impact the entire rest of your life. And it starts with finances. So there's the investment side, IRA, 401k, and I remember talking to some people about this when I was in my 20s, and they were saying, well, I thought that's what older people worked on.
Yeah.
And you're like, dude, if you knock that out in your 20s, you're done. You could be done forever. Mm-hmm. Big deal.
Mm-hmm.
The reverse of that with credit card debt or student loans. And you could be, if you'll excuse this expression, you know, credit card hell. You know, somebody said that to me one time, and I was like, people get caught in that. And if they have $30,000 in credit card debt when they're 30, I mean, it's hard to ever get out of that.
It really is.
I mean, Dave Ramsey has an entire career on giving advice to people about that. I've been talking recently about investing, promoting the investing into real estate, and I get people that will email me and they'll say, I'm really interested in that, and what are your thoughts? And I always say, well, pay off your mortgage, pay off your student loans, pay off your credit card debt, and then call me. And Mike, most times I never hear from him again because it's sort of like a fantasy. But when I start talking about like reducing your own debt reduction, so when I say investing and I'm talking about an 18-year-old and when I'm talking about debt and I'm talking about 18-year-old, those are conversations, if you're talking to your younger self, that'd be one of the first ones that would come up.
Now, you mentioned student debt, and there would be a lot of people that would say, what options do I have if I don't take a school loan? And I was talking, John, to a young lady one time, and she had was graduating with a doctorate, a veterinary degree, and was looking for a job. Her student loan debt was $250,000. And I was shocked, and I'm thinking, how in the world does that happen? And so here was my question. I said, do you ever get any counsel from the people in the schools who are allowing you to go into that? I mean, that's what schools do, a lot of them. They're, right. They're allowing you to go ahead and rack up that kind of student loan debt. Do they help you devise a way to get out of that debt once you're out of school? And she thought for a moment, and she said, well, actually, what I've heard more from, and this is a loose translation of what she said, but it's the gist of it, what I've heard more from are ways that you can avoid ever paying it back.
Jeez.
And I'm thinking that was off the record, obviously, right, that those people were saying that. But there's almost this, I think there's this thought that's out there that it doesn't really matter. I'm always going to have this. This is just going to be like the wart that you can't get rid of. It's going to follow you around forever. That's a sad but reality, a true reality that many people carry around for many, many years, decades after they graduate from college. They're still fighting a school loan.
Well, and so let's unpack that in a lot of ways, right? It's an important topic. Another thing some universities have done is they'll take, you know, like let's say your kid is a senior. You're like, hey, Mike, your kid is so good. And, you know, they're looking at this really cool university and the school calls you and your kid and says, hey, we want you here. And in fact, your kid's so impressive. We're going to give them a 75% scholarship. And you hear that and you're like, man, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. And I'm making up numbers. And then it's like, yeah, it's $100,000 a year. So all you have to do is come with $30,000.
Yeah.
I'm dead serious.
Yeah.
Like that scam happens, right? That scam happens. The other part I want to just jump to this is that, dude, credit. You know, that we know like 40% of America right now can't put $400 together. And I've seen so many examples of people, you know, getting bad credit ratings and then they can't get money to do any kind of basic things. And then if there's an emergency, they're really in trouble and it causes high levels of stress.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that's when I would go back to like when kids are seniors in high school, they're all talking about their SAT scores. And I'm like, man, what's your credit rating? Right. And you don't have to make a ton of money to have great credit. You got to pay your bills. You got to live within your means. Mm-hmm. Right. So lot of big lessons that we're talking about here. So let's go back to the college thing. First thing I want to say, and this is for people living in Central Florida, and I would say, you know, from Orlando to the Villages to Gainesville, here's what you need at home. No, college is totally affordable. It's totally affordable. Now, if somebody said, well, I want my kid to go to Tufts or Boston College or whatever, and I want them to be there on campus at 18 years old, and I want them to join a fraternity and a sorority and blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, that is not for everybody. And, you know, I don't know that I would advocate taking a loan out for that. But let me tell you something. You can get an AA from Valencia College for $5,000. Santa Fe College is also a very affordable, very good college. You can live at home and work. There is no reason, honestly, for anyone in Central Florida to get an associate's degree with debt. There's no reason. Because at $5,000, you could work the whole time. You could raise that money. You can live at home. You can all kinds of ways you can figure out people do it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then when you're talking about, then you go on to University of Florida, UCF, FSU, FAU, wherever. Well, your cost is now 50% reduced, right? And you're also 2 years older. And so you probably have more job skills and you can get other jobs out there. Right. So don't hear me saying I'm 100% against taking out all student loans. I'm not. But there's a better way to do it. And I'd add this. I had a family member one time and contacted me and said, you know, Uncle John, I was thinking about going to get my MBA. And then I did the math and it cost $150,000. And I was thinking, maybe I should just take a loan up for $150,000 and start a business. And I said, yeah, I mean, there are reasons to get a graduate degree, again, an MBA and all kinds of stuff, but you've got to do that math and really own it and understand it. Just getting more education to get more education is not necessarily the best thing. I always tell young people, if you don't know really why you're going to law school, you're going to graduate not knowing what to do as a lawyer. If you don't know why you're going to get your graduate degree, the problem's going to keep going. Now, I will say this on the other side. I do think that the decade you want to get the most education is your 20s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are people who float through their 20s and never even get an AA, and then they have some regret in that. And I would recommend for a high percentage of people getting an AA, getting a four-year degree, and getting that done in your 20s, and the baseline that gives you for so many things, relationships, connecting with people, I highly recommend. Some people say, well, college is not for everybody. And I'm like, actually, some level of college is like 95% of the population would benefit from some level mm-hmm. of it. So I do think our 20s is a great area to do that. But man, the mistake with college and bills and loans is devastating to a lot of people.
And the credit card thing, going back to that for just a moment, is really completely avoidable in most circumstances, right? Because so often it's that thing that I just feel that I can't live without. And I'm not willing to wait. You know, there's this whole thing. You mentioned Dave Ramsey. He talks about deferred, satisfaction, and basically not allowing yourself to go into debt now over something that you could wait and save for. So that delayed gratification is something that is not only helpful from a debt standpoint, but it's actually a character building trait,
right,
in your life as well. That if you could overcome that tension. I stood one time and I was paying for something, and I've used credit cards for years, and I have a couple of credit cards, I think three of them, and I pay them off every month. I never let any monthly thing go over, and I don't treat it like it were cash. It's not cash. It's, you know, it's something that if I buy it now, I got to pay for it.
Well,
and I stood at this checkout, and there's a young girl. She must have been 14 years old. Mm-hmm. And she saw, and I had a, I think at that point it was an American Express card. She goes, wow, if I had that, I could buy anything. And I'm thinking, no, you couldn't. You could if you think it's magic and you buy it and it's yours and you don't ever have to pay for it. Maybe you could do it that way. But that's the attitude that I think a lot of young people have, and they don't save for it. They charge it thinking, well, I can make all those easy monthlies. And the same thing that got them in trouble with that one gets them in trouble with another card. And the first thing you know, they've maxed out two or three credit cards. And now they're struggling to pay. Now, you talk about the impossible dream. That's paying for those minimum monthly payments on a credit card. And boy, they just never go away.
Well, if you do that and then eventually pay them off, every product you bought, you pay four times as much.
Yeah.
Four times as much as what you're doing. You know, when we talked in the earlier segment and we were talking about 4-year-old and teaching a 4-year-old about self-control with a cookie, right? it's the same thing you just said, right? So now we're talking about it's that life lesson of self-control in those situations, right? So it's a big deal. My brother-in-law, Chris Sullivan, graduated from high school and, excellent high school student, excellent high school athlete. I'm sure his dream was probably to go away immediately. But as life would have it, he got a full ride to then Brevard Community College, now Brevard College. And, you know, some people look down on that, like it was 13th grade or something like that. Here's what Chris did. Chris graduated from high school in, let's just say, May, June. He started on his AA the next week. Mm. He took a full load that summer, full load the fall, full load the spring, full load the next summer. And within 1 year, he had his AA.
Wow.
And then transferred to FSU.
Mm-hmm.
Where is Chris Sullivan today? He's a senior executive with a little company called Microsoft. Okay. Yeah. And, he's had just a phenomenal, successful career in many ways. But I will never forget him and, you know, getting that scholarship, getting the opportunity. It wasn't sexy, cool. It wasn't like, oh, my son's a freshman at Auburn and he's doing this. Dude, he worked at a moving company. He was moving furniture and going to community college, but had the scholarship. He knocked it out.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the last point I want to say about being college age. And I'm not trying to say don't enjoy it in life, all this kind of stuff. But I always tell college students, if you had to pick a decade that you work the most hours, do you want to work the most hours when you're in your 20s, your 30s, your 40s, your 50s, your 60s, your 70s, your 80s? Which the decade you want to put the most hours in? The answer is your 20s, right? And so I meet so many people. Think about regret, right? When you meet people who are 35 and they're miserable and they're struggling and they're having a hard time, a lot of times it's like, well, what did they do in their 20s?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times what they did was kind of nothing. I mean, they just kind of float. Like, you know, they're involved in kickball leagues at 26 years old or 28 years old. They're playing video games. I'm not joking. Or they're all weekend, or they're smoking weed all weekend or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, what are you doing? And they just waste a decade of their life. I know a person one time who got the opportunity to go to medical school and they turned it down because and I was young at the time. They said to me, I don't want to spend my entire 20s going to classes all the time. And when I was young, I was maybe 15 when I heard this, I thought, well, that makes sense. And my whole life now I look back and think, that's the dumbest decision I've ever heard. Like, what a great investment of your 20s going to medical school and then you're a doctor forever. So there's some huge, huge lifelong decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they have to do with money, investing and spending. And they have to do with education and then, you know, applying that. And then it goes to working and really putting in wise hours in at work.
You know, you were talking about going back to money for a second, and boy, if I could go back in my own life and do some things differently, I would do what I advised my children to do, and that's exactly what you did, and I'm grateful you did it. I wish I had done it, and that was maxing out your IRA in your 20s, because the monies you save, and if a kid were to start saving, let's say at 17, 18 years old, and they could take $100 a month, if nothing less than that, and start putting it away and then more as you can. You talk about maxing out like an IRA, that'd be $6,000 a year.
Right.
And if you were to do that and you were to do that in your 20s, if you were to save that kind of money and then you stopped investing from your 20s on forward, say when you hit 30, you let that money just continue to compound, that exponential increase would make that person a millionaire by the time they're 65.
Oh, there's no doubt about it, right? I mean, think about if you had two 28-year-olds, man and woman, met, decided, fall in love, they'll get married, and they're 30. If both of them had essentially no debt,
mm-hmm.
right? They listen, they didn't count owning a home, but that they had no loans, no credit card debt, and they both had done that. What a launching pad for them to do all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's a launching pad for, you know, marital success, business success, all this kind of stuff. It's a launching pad for ministry success, by the way, too. You know, when you are disciplined and financial responsibility, you find yourself in better positions to give.
Mm-hmm.
I find that, like, you know, my wife will see something, she's really touched, and she's like, man, I really think we should give to blank. Well, we can. Yeah, I'm 49 and she's a little older, Mike. Don't ask me. But we're in position. We can do that. That didn't happen overnight. I meet people who have generous hearts, but they have no money.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, you know, if you want to be a person that's very giving of your time, you have to have some empty space on your calendar. If you want to be able to give away money, you have to have some extra money in your checking account. Right.
Right.
And those things take time to get there. Can I say one last thing on
this,
Mike, real
quick? Yes, absolutely, man.
You know, people will say, you know, on your deathbed, no one wishes they spent more time at the office. I think that's wrong. I think there are some people that wish they spent more time in the office, and I'll tell you why. This may surprise some people. I've lost 6 friends of mine in my life who were older and died through hospice, and so I've spent a lot of time in hospice facilities meeting with my friends. And many times when I've done that, I've passed bed after bed of people who are completely alone. There's a lot of people in our community dying alone. You remember talking about my story, my friend Gunny, who was one of 152 people last year who passed away and went unclaimed. Well, how does that happen? Part of it happens because there's no one there that can take care of them because they don't have the time or the financial resources, right? So part of living a responsible life and then providing for others and then creating opportunities, all that connects. We can all be the most tender-hearted good people in the world, but if we have no money and we have no skills and we have to do things, we're surviving. You can't give when you're in survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not advocating overworking, not at all. But I am saying that God created us to work. That's part of our life. And to find passion in that and find purpose in that and apply ourselves well, that's a very important lesson to learn in your 20s.
We're going to be back here with John Crossman coming up in just a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. Talking to John Crossman about things that if we could go back and address issues in our life, that would be from what we've learned in living our life. What would they be? And we've covered in segment 1, younger children, segment 2, very sage advice from John on college, age, saving money, avoiding debt. Oh, my goodness. This will be something that I'm going to be sending this podcast out, John, to people, because this is some good stuff. If kids get a hold of this, if we could just affect one person
right,
and let them start saving money for their retirement, they'll one day be looking back going, man, I remember the day I heard John Crossman say that. I did it, and now look at my life. That would be amazing. So here we are now, kids that are married. How are we going to look? And I know you can't look at this personally, but your kids are not out of that age yet. What ages do you have at all?
My daughters are 15 and 17.
Oh, what a wonderful time.
Yeah, they're awesome.
I remember those years. My youngest is now in the upper 20s. And my oldest is in the 40s. So, I'm grateful for that. And so when you look at things, what advice do you have, John, for people that are now helping their adult children in marriage and preparing for a home and raising their own family?
Well, I think I would start with that there's a lot of just basic blocking and tackling we could talk about, right? Like simple stuff of like, hey, communicate well, make sure you're home on time, you know, spend time together. I mean, there's sort of like all these little boxes. I'd say that beyond that, man, life gets messy and hard.
Mm-hmm.
Life gets messy and hard. Things happen. There's a musical called Into the Woods, and there's one line in one of the songs, and it says, sometimes people leave you halfway through the wood. And in that story was about, you know, the baker and his father dying, you know. And boy, that's true that, man, we lose a parent, we lose a child, we lose, that there's a, something happens in the church, you know, there's a scandal in the church, you know, and I think sometimes we give a false image to young people where we say, look, go to college, graduate, get married, go to join a church, join a Bible study, tithe, and then like, it's going to be easy on down the road. And it's just not.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not. And so I think that I would say trying to continue to acquire more skill sets. And those skill sets may come from places that we don't often look to.
Mm-hmm.
And like, what am I alluding to? Well, I'm alluding to recovery. You know, I have had more and more times when I've talked to adult Christians that I've encouraged them to consider Al-Anon, you know, that maybe they were raised by an alcoholic mother or father, and as they've grown up, they've married well, and their life checks a lot of boxes, but underneath it has some real suffering, and there's some more skills out there. There is hope. There's things that God's provided. Or, you know, you and I have talked before about suicide, and that, you know, when I lost my dear friend to suicide, I was shocked at the amount of resources out there. You know, I feel so much better at this point in my life that I can help somebody that's going through that season because I'm more aware of the resources out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just would say that, you know, we can all work hard and do all the things that, you know, traditionally called to do, but we're still going to have unexpected tragedy. Life does not go according to script, does it, Mike?
It doesn't. And sometimes I know having, you know, that situation that kind of happened in our family where Cindy and I, we lost our second child just because of a birth situation that when our little baby was formed without kidneys. And that was the bottom line. And so there's nothing that could have been done to avoid it. But, you know, when I look back on that, some of the most important things that happened in our lives subsequently to that were affected and impacted and learned from those tragedy situations that happened in our lives. There's nothing. And I think you're right in the fact that there are so many resources that people don't just have to get trapped. They don't have to get stuck.
Right.
And that becomes their end to their life. I've got just enough time to give one little bit of advice here. Make time for the grace of God in your life every day to re-energize your day. I had a bit of advice one time that was given when I'm leaving the office as a dad, and now I'm going home to young children who have been waiting all day long for dad to get home. I need to have a place in the road where I pass by every day on the way home and say, God, today, freshly, give me new strength, new grace to love my kids and to love my wife when I go home. And I depend on your grace, Lord. Fill me anew. I'm tired. I've had a long day. But my kids, they've been waiting for dad. And we need to be there for them. So I would encourage you, remember that. Take up a spot and say, when I pass by that mark, it's like a memorial to me that I want to remember. My kids need me. My wife needs her husband. I need to be engaged. I don't need to get home, check out, sit on the sofa, sit on the recliner, and sleep for the rest of the night. My kids need me. Stay engaged.
Amen to that. And you know what's funny, Mike, is we don't have to have all the answers, but man, a hug and undivided eyeball-to-eyeball attention so many times that's all they need.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so crucial that we give that. And you're talking about having gap time, like in your calendar. It's like, hey, I'm going to spend this time, make sure I'm available. So God bless you, Mike. You're doing great stuff, man.
Oh, this has been fun. Thank you for being with me, my friend John Crossman. I know he's got another appointment to run off to. Friends, thank you for being with me as well. I hope you can join us next time here on The Shepherd on Afternoons with Mike.